Accession number 18493, Reel 10.
Arnold Lupton, Reel 10.
Our next stop after Cape Town was Port Said, where we unloaded and they got all the men off the Duchess of Bedford, they got all the vehicles off the others. Then I'm sure it's when we got there that we got topies and we got our jabs for whatever Egypt could turn up. It could turn up quite a few things, mainly Gypo Tummy, which has different names in different countries. And we weren't protected against Gypo Tummy, we protected against everything else, supposedly. And we were a short while in the outskirts of Port Said, and then we got moved straight away up the desert to, I think it was near to Mirza Matru, which is a fair way up towards the Libyan border. Anyway, we were out in the desert getting acclimatized and getting ready to join up with the rest of the troops who were already in Egypt. I think the first tanks were there. I can't remember any other tanks. And then we got all ready for this, and I was then gunner on the tank of our squadron commander, C Squadron Commander Major Brown. And we were ready to go, more or less. Then unfortunately, about, I don't know how long before, 2 or 3 days before we eventually got the move off, I couldn't stand up or anything else. I had jaundice. And I used to say, I don't know whether the bones of Chinamen are yellow, but I used to say that I was like a Chinese skeleton because I'd lost 3 stone in weight. And I was extremely ill.
How long did it take you to lose that amount of weight?
Not many days. Well, I don't know. I might have had it coming on for a few days beforehand when I didn't notice any weight loss. Same when I got diabetes too. I lost 3 stone then and hadn't noticed it going off suddenly. It just went. I only know that when I got to hospital, when they weighed me, I was about 9.5 stone, normally 12.5.
Where was the hospital? And they took
Alexandria. I vaguely remember just driving in one or more ambulances across vast stretches of sand, and I really wasn't conscious most of the time anyway, sort of fever, you know, and then eventually I found myself in this hospital in Alexandria, and I was there 2-3 weeks perhaps. I used to dream of eating properly again, because while I was there I was fed on boiled chicken, boiled fish, boiled potatoes occasionally, never an egg, never anything with fat. Oh, plain bread, no fat, or plain biscuit, no butter. And I used to just lie there and dream of eggs and chips. I don't know why, but Well, it was a sort of staple diet in Egypt anyway, eggs and chips. He used to get about 6 eggs. He never got less than that because they were such miserable little things. Anyway, that, as I say, I was there about 3 weeks, I think, and then got sent down to the barracks in Egypt for recuperation. That was in just outside Cairo. And I know I was so weak when I came out of the hospital that I couldn't get up to the first floor where I was supposed to be in these barracks in Abbasia. I did eventually manage to get up, but it took me most of the afternoon, and I then slept for 36 hours without any break. And anyway, after that, eventually I managed to pick up, but it took me quite a while to get around it. The is this on there? Oh, well, I have a friend now who's a retired doctor, he's 90, and when I happened to mention this recently, he said, oh, you know why that, why you got this, illness? I said, no. He said, didn't the army tell you? I said, they wouldn't tell you anything like that. He said it was because of dirty equipment when they injected you with all your other things. So I wasn't surprised about that, really, because I'd been in a few injection queues, and they certainly didn't bother to change needles every time or anything like that. I was pleased to hear that. I wondered why I should have got it. I don't know why I should instead of everybody else, anyway.
So but how long did it take you to recover?
Well, it took me, it was at least 2 months before I felt reasonably fit. I think 3 months before I was back to doing everything I should have been able to do.
What sort of, it sounds to me as if they actually discharged you a little early. I mean, if you were too weak even to go up a flight of stairs, then maybe the...
Well, I probably was, but the thing was, I suppose, maybe casualties had started to come down from the desert and they had to move people out who were reasonably fit anyway to allow in casualties to the hospitals.
I mean, other than that, I mean, what was your impression of the medical side of things in Alex?
Well, it was very good. The beds were comfortable. I wouldn't say the staff were, that is all the QA, IMS or MNS or something, sisters and so on were not exactly the most friendly. But they looked after you well, they fed you as well as they were allowed to. The accommodation was kept very clean and smart. Mind you, there was all this, everything had to be tucked in just so and all the rest of it. But I couldn't complain about it. And... I say it was the best part of 3 months before I was really fit, and in the meantime, the Italian campaign had started, and the second had a very brilliant operation all the way up as far as Benghazi. But unfortunately, Major Brown, in charge of my tank, was killed, so I don't know whether I would have been... injured or anything in that on that occasion, but that was the first one I missed, let's say.
How did they go about your rehabilitation when you got to Abbasia?
Well, eventually the people from the unit began to come down and all were sent to Abbasia, and eventually also the full unit came down, not to Abbasia, they went to another place called Sidi Bish, I think it was, or Sidi Bishr, at Alexandria, and we, when they then knew they were in one position, they moved us over there to join them again. And I still went back to C Squadron and still carried on as a tank gunner afterwards.
Yeah, I was really thinking about, I mean, were you still under medical supervision when you were in when you went back to Abbasia?
Oh, Abbasia, yes. You had to go and see the MO every, first of all, every day for a few days, and then I think you got down to twice a week and once a week and that sort of thing for about another month after I had arrived there.
What sort of duties were you on?
Very light duties at the time. We didn't have to go to any PE classes or any marching around on parades and so on, not for a few days, not for a week or 2 weeks probably there. In the meantime, all you did was light duties, mainly just keeping the barrack rooms clean and tidy. Then you would get a few jobs like helping out in the cookhouse and so on. Nothing too strenuous.
Before we go on now to you rejoining the regiment, we went very quickly through the trip over to North Africa. You said you stopped at Freetown. Was there any shore leave at Freetown?
No, that was just I think it was refueling. I think we were an oil fired vessel. I don't think it was a coaling job. Can't just remember. It was made about 1924, this ship. It might have been a coaling job. I seem to remember a lot of coal around somewhere. I thought it was perhaps just floating in barges, but I think some of it came into our ship. Then it was really a refueling again at Cape Town and replenishment of water.
But on the journey over, what were the facilities like on the ship?
They were very good. We were in berths. I don't know what size of berth ours had originally been or what it had in it, but it had three tier bunk beds, which were a little bit cramped in the normal height of a cabin, but still managed to get 9 of us in this one cabin. But the feeding arrangements were very good, baths and all that, toilets. It was very well equipped, and we were very well furnished, as you might say.
What was the crew? Was this a Canadian vessel?
Was it?
Because you said it
was really Smart. Well, it was Canadian Pacific Rail, sea and rail vessel, and I don't think at that time that the crew were all Canadian. I think there were some Canadian, but I think mainly there were British on there.
Now, how about discipline and so on the ship? I mean, was everyone put through their paces, or did you have drills to do?
Oh, yes. We had drills to do and runs around the deck and all this kind of thing to keep you fit. And but there was still a fair amount of unused part of the day when you could lie in the sun or look out and see whatever there was to see. Water spouts or dolphins or flying fish or wherever you were. And but we never saw any enemy vessels of any kind. We never had any trouble at all on the journey from enemy ships.
Did you go through the ritual of a crossing the line ceremonies? Did you bother with any of that?
Oh, yes, they gave us that. Well, they gave us that going down south. We didn't have it again going north on the other side of Africa, but yes, it was quite interesting to go through that.
What did they do with you?
Oh, it was only more or less ducking, you know, throwing plenty of water about and all that kind of thing. A bit of fancy dress, if you had anybody had any they could use. It was just good-natured banter and mucking about sort of thing. But it was something which you had to do as you were going across the line anyway.
So when you arrived in North Africa, you say that's when you got your jabs. Is that when you got your tropical kit, or was that given to you before you left the UK?
No, I don't recall tropical kit before we went. I think it came when we arrived there, and that's when we got tropical kit plus topies. Which were a complete and utter waste of time for anybody in a tank. And how many thousands of pounds worth of topies got smashed up and buried in the next few weeks when we got into the desert, I don't know, but certainly very practically everybody's went.
Is that what happened? They were destroyed rather than simply handed back in?
Nobody wanted the things back. No, nobody bothered to ask for them back. They just smashed them up and buried them.
Literally buried them?
Literally buried them in the dust, so-called sand. Which is, to call it sand is really, you know, elevating it to a much higher state than it really was. Because it's like face powder, just blows around. Even if you walk in it, it scuffs up and everything is coated in this horrible muck.
Is this common, or is this in a particular area where this?
Well, we found it, I think, in nearly every area of the desert we were in. Dust and rock, chunks of rock, not necessarily big rocks, but chunks of smallish pieces of rock. It's not like it looks on the films when they show you these vast sand hills. There are possibly in parts of the Sahara, but I think there must be a lot of places where it's not, like when we got some of it over here the other day. That's just the kind of pinkish, yellowish dust that we used to get coated in, and everything got smothered in.
Going back to your tropical kit for the moment, what was your kit issue when you arrived?
Well, they were lighter khaki shirts, shorts, trousers, overalls, khaki overalls, And that was really it.
What about footwear?
Oh, we still had the usual boots. Good old army boots. You had them wherever you were, really. Didn't make any difference. Not the most comfortable things, but considering scorpions and various other things around on the desert, it's quite a good idea. A, they couldn't sting through it, and B, you could stamp on them. Yes, you used to get some weird things around. At night, you always got some big spiders which came out, mainly to catch flies, because when you had your tanks out on the desert, you just put a ground sheet, well, no, a big ground sheet on tent, on sticks along the side of the tank, and slept underneath that, because there could be a bit of dew in the night sometimes, and it kept it off you. And these things, spiders, had bodies about as big as the ball of my thumb, and then enormous things like parrot beaks, two of them on the front end of the body, great long hairy legs. Normally they wouldn't affect a human, but they were very unpleasant if you woke up in the night and one had just dropped on you from the above, and you naturally you tried to hit it. But these things, we used to call them scorpion spiders, because they were about the only things that could fight scorpions and win, always. And but they were the main. The flies, of course, were just impossible to count. It didn't matter if you moved miles and miles in the day. When you landed at the other end, there were all the flies waiting for you, or they'd come with you, I don't know which. But if you got the slightest scratch or anything, they would be there in sort of several bodies deep, trying to get at the juice. So it was very nice when they were killed off by these spiders at night, because they used to rest on your overhead cover, and then the spiders would come along and eat them. You could hear them going all night long, mincing up these things. And there were, of course, the occasional snake, but nothing really bad there. Cleopatra did have an asp sometime, but I never saw one that I can remember. A few which weren't poisonous or didn't appear to be. As I say, mainly the vast number of scorpions which came out, especially at night, and occasionally found themselves a nice comfortable spot in your blankets, which wasn't a very good thing if you didn't flick your blankets or get out of bed in a certain way in the morning.
Could they be dangerous?
Well, they weren't enough to kill you, but they could be very unpleasant, the sting. Could make you a bit poorly if it was a fairly big one. But normally, no, those in the desert weren't all that bad. Just nasty to have around.
Did you ever get stung?
No, I was very lucky. Bloke in the next bed, he got stung about six times one night with one, just one in its bed. It made his knee very painful around there, and his hand when he tried to get hold of the thing and get rid of it. But he was only off duty, let's say, for a couple of days at the most.
Going back again to your kit, one hears things about something called desert boots. What were these?
Well, they were a kind of, not exactly kid leather, they were suede anyway of some kind, and with a rubber sole generally, and rubber heel. They weren't used normally by troops in the desert, but several of the officers had them, which they could buy personally. They had been issued with boots like we were, but they could wear these if they wanted, the desert boots.
Well, that was the boots. What was the preferred headgear if you had destroyed all your topes?
Well, mainly, no, not mainly. To a large extent, people wore their berets, the black berets which we had, and otherwise there was a thing called a cap comforter, which I think had initially been issued as a sort of scarf to go, like a woolen knitted scarf to go in the front of the greatcoat in very cold weather, which of course we didn't have there. But these, if you folded them up in a certain way, you could wear them as a cap on your head. And these were very good, being thick enough really to keep the sun off, but somehow you didn't get a hot head wearing them. And a very large number of people just wore these cap comforter head protectors. So that was how we kept comfortable, more or less. And apart from that, we had these short-sleeved shirts, lighter shirts on. We had shorts, which initially were those horrible things that come down beneath your knees and flap around all over the place. And everybody had shortened them as much as they could do by just cutting them off, not bothering necessarily to sew up the cut edges. And we just wore socks down by the boots. So you didn't realize it at the time. You were probably building up good reserves for melanoma or something, but that's only come in very recently. But we kept reasonably cool and comfortable.
Now, you returned to your unit. You returned to 2nd Royal Tanks after your stay at Abbasia. Yeah. What was your job when you went back?
Well, when I went back, onto a tank crew as a gunner, again, on an A-13 we had then, cruiser, and we had those most of the time afterwards in the desert. The A-9s and 10s gradually got phased out, or perhaps some other unlucky people got them, I don't know. But The practice, which we had plenty of exercising again on driving, maintaining the tanks and so on, and gunnery, static and on the move. And so this was down near Alexandria at Sidi Bish. Then we moved up again to near Mirza Matru. They were planning again. We didn't know it necessarily, but it had to happen. They were planning again to go through the wire, which was the only thing that divided Egypt from Libya, to see what we could do with the Germans who had come down by that time as fairly near to Tobruk and to the desert wire. So then they, we had more training up there, and then they decided, I can't say just when, probably about June, to make an attack on the Germans to clear them out and to try to relieve the strain on the people who had got left in Tobruk.
We're now talking